I'm Ricky Bevington for Georgia Public Broadcasting. It is well documented that women are less likely than men to reach the highest ranks of corporate management. But for the few women who do reach the corner office, how does gender influence their job? That's the focus of a doctoral student at the University of Georgia's Terry College of Business. Abby Oliver is co-author of BS in the Boardroom, Benevolent Sexism in Board Chair Orientations. And she joins me now. Welcome, Abby.
Thank you for having me.
Explain, what is benevolent sexism?
Benevolent sexism is a subtler bias of how we view females. It's rooted in thinking of females in their traditional communal role as a mother, and the thought that they need to be held on this pedestal to be protected. It kind of comes from this idea of that, you know, the traditional man is men are bad but bold and women are wonderful but weak. And the way we see this in kind of our day-to-day basis can come from everything of, oh, let me hold the door open for you. Let me, you know, the traditional, you see the photo of somebody, a man throwing his coat down on a puddle for a female. But the way that we're seeing this kind of translate into the workplace is potentially, oh, that female, you know, she needs to get home to her family. She may be overwhelmed. Let's not give her as much work, which then also could translate potentially into not as much opportunity in the workplace.
So for a female CEO and her board, they share a common goal, which is the success of the company. Do companies perform better or worse with this different type of dynamic in the boardroom?
One of the things that I'm showing with my research is how the board views the female, and that seeing this gender stereotype can kind of be a predictor of which way they work together or which orientation. But one thing we have seen with research is that whichever orientation, whether or not they view a female as more collaborative and a male as more of a risk-taker agent, that these orientations do have an impact on performance and that they can be kind of context specific. At this current state, with my work, we're not arguing that one is particularly better or worse, but that it truly is an understanding that the CEO and working with our board is a very important relationship where key decisions are made, and understanding the parameters of those relationships with any good, you know, team working environment and understanding how they both view each other is critical to good performance.
So the purpose of your research is really self-awareness for corporate leaders?
Yes, I mean, that's one of the things that I think is a key takeaway from this is that for female CEOs, for so long we've been focused on those that have, you were saying before, shattered the glass ceiling and made it there. Now, because there's so few there, we're trying to really get an idea of, okay, what is the working environment that they have? How do some of these critical people and decision makers at the top of companies such as the board view them? And how can they best work in these relationships?
So why do this study now?
Well, one of the reasons that we're looking into this now is the fact that we're finally getting to a point where there's enough females to study. But given that, one of the kind of disheartening statistics is that there's still more men named John run big companies than all women. In fact, 5.3% of companies are run by Johns, 4.5% of companies are run by Davids, and only 4.1% of our large companies are run by women at this point in time. So it's still a very small number, but thankfully this number has grown at least to 4% over the past 20 years. And we as researchers and media attention are being able to now focus on this group of women and start to understand what is the world like for these females who have shattered the glass ceiling and have made it to the, you know, the top of the corporate ladder as a CEO.
So how is your research applicable to women of all kinds in any kind of leadership position, whether it be in their personal or professional life?
Well, I think one of the things to understand is that benevolent sexism, that actually both sexes participate in this, that just because you are a female in the workplace doesn't mean that you're immune to acting in a benevolent sexist way towards females. And I think a key piece is awareness of understanding and thinking about when you're making choices for your female employees, when you're thinking about different circumstances, just to be aware that there's biases could be coming through in more subtler ways, that it's not always that you're trying to particularly pay a female less or you choose to not hire a female just because she's female, that these really can influence your day-to-day decisions. And I think that key piece of bringing it to the forefront is the main purpose of looking at this stuff today. One of the things just showing to the rarity of females that in that whole data set, we don't have a single female CEO and a single female chairman of a board yet. One piece that wasn't surprising was that the more females that you have in the boardroom, that these stereotypes dissipate. But what we also saw is that some of the stereotypes towards male leaders also dissipated. So that was kind of an interesting idea that, you know, these aren't just focused towards seeing the female as collaborative, that you might also potentially see a male as less of a risk taker or agent as well.
So if we were to flip the script a little bit, you're saying that male CEOs are also treated differently. How are they treated?
That there's a potential out there that they are seen as more of the opportunistic shirker and less of the, you know, communal steward of the firm, that they do need to be monitored and disciplined more, that they are more of this traditional, you know, bad but bold CEO, that you think that they're more likely potentially to have a scandal or to do something unethical because that aligns more with kind of this traditional gender stereotype of a male versus the female that you think of in the traditional role of being a mother, which we've seen for female CEOs that they are shown to be, you know, more open to opinions, that they ruminate on decisions more, that they tend to be better at innovation and creativity where you have to take in a lot of different inputs. And all of these are ideas of, you know, being the more open, communicative, traditional female role.
Which can certainly come in handy as the leader of a large company.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that further research that I'm really interested in looking at is that kind of in this idea of crisis or a time when you need to be talking to a lot of people. People want to know what's going on, that females may potentially be preferred. If you think about it in the most basic level as a little kid, when you skinned your knee or something was going wrong, you're more likely to run to your mom for the person to talk to about it than to go to, you know, the traditional male person who was just wanted to fix it or didn't have an idea what was going on.
I think it's important to point out that some women don't mind having the door opened for them or being the recipient of what you call benevolent sexism. And yet the word sexism is so negative. How do you square that?
I think one of the things is really for a lot of females in the workplace is trying to be able to draw that line, and you're having to see it a lot between, you know, what might be more acceptable in your personal life versus the image that you carry at work. And one of the things that I've told to people as I've been working on this work is, you know, you don't need to stop holding a door for a female. You just, key to that awareness piece is understanding that, you know, living in a world that systematically does this every day, does this translate into the fact that you in a workplace may make a female feel out of place by, you know, apologizing for telling the dirty joke where she's sitting there thinking, I'm part of the team, why are you singling me out? And so it's really just kind of an understanding of those bases. The other piece of it, you know, from more of a strategic female perspective is understanding, you know, if this is the environment you're working in, you know, are there avenues to use it to your advantage as well? That's one of the things that if, you know, females have been held back, is there something to know that, okay, I'm working in this more, you know, open, collaborative environment. You know, does this mean that I can maybe get my opinion heard more because I can talk to more people easier? So I think it's also strategically for the females understanding, are there ways that they can use this for their own success as well?
And the truth is, we're never going to get gender out of the workplace as long as gender is in our life, right? So,
correct.
As you said, self-awareness is the purpose of studies like this. Did you find a generational difference in terms of gender attitudes?
In this current study, we did not. I mean, one of the key things that you saw from a generational perspective is that, you know, we're at 4% females in the upper echelons in these C-suites now. I mean, that's taken, you know, over the past 40 years to get there. So there just really wasn't even the opportunity a generation ago to even study these things because we didn't have examples. One of the key things, too, is that kind of with the rareness of females there is that their gender is super salient. If you think about it, you know, on Forbes magazine, we have 100 most powerful women. You know, the hope would be another generation from now, it seems odd to have that cover.
Well, Abby Oliver, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Abby Oliver is co-author of BS in the Boardroom, Benevolent Sexism and Board Chair Orientations.